Welcome back to the real world. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are with Dr. Barry Beatty. We are in Taos, New Mexico, and you're telling us about dengue fever. And this is a very important subject in the world at large. Please continue where we broke away.
Okay. Well, in Southeast Asia, what happened then with concomitant with the movement of Aedes aegypti into these large urban areas is dengue, which usually or is, typically had been diagnosed as a mild febrile illness of individuals and so forth, this severe clinical manifestation of hemorrhagic fever and shock syndrome emerged. And there are two theories about this. One is called immune enhancement. There are four serotypes of dengue, and these serotypes, very basic, if an individual is infected with one serotype and then subsequently infected with a second serotype, you have this potential for immune enhancement, it's called, where you end up with potentially this much more severe clinical situation. Hmm. Another group thought that there was probably more transmission of viruses going on and maybe some more virulent genotypes of dengue virus were causing the severe infection. Well, those two are probably not mutually exclusive, and these things usually aren't. But anyway, the increased endemicity of the human populations.
Endemicity, being endemic?
Yeah, I should say the increased endemicity of dengue due to the increased urban populations, the much greater and more abundant Aedes aegypti populations, led to much more virus circulation, much more chance for an immune enhancement, much more chance for more virulent genotypes to infect children and so forth. And so, as I say, this emerged as one of the major pediatric diseases in Southeast Asia, and indeed it still is. Well, to get back to the Americas, we had knocked down Aedes aegypti, or the public health authorities throughout the Western Hemisphere had, to such a level that dengue really wasn't a major problem. And as Aedes aegypti started to come back, and indeed now if you look at the distribution maps that CDC puts out, the Aedes aegypti is back throughout virtually the entire Western Hemisphere. Not only that, we now have all four serotypes of dengue circulating. We have dengue emergencies in most Central and South American countries called each year. Most countries now also have dengue hemorrhagic fever and shock syndrome.
Most people would say, well, why don't you just kill the bugs?
Well, that's a very good question. And indeed, probably one of the greatest medical milestones in history was a discovery by Walter Reed and his colleagues that that yellow fever was vectored by or was transmitted by a mosquito, and it's just a marvelous story. And of course, as soon as that was discovered, General Gorgas and other colleagues went in and cleaned up Havana and cleaned up the Panama Canal and many other Central and South American cities and showed that can be done, source reduction can be done. But I think it's important to note this was done in a very different era. First of all, they were able to do this in a military campaign. You know, if you show up now in somebody's backyard and are trying to clean up breeding sites, you probably would be shot.
Or at least a lawyer would be sitting on your doorstep.
But also, you know, society is so different. It's such a throwaway society now. And I didn't point out, but Aedes aegypti oviposits in old tires, old cans, flower pots.
You're talking about laying eggs.
Yeah.
For those of us.
Oviposits. Yeah. I got it. Laying eggs.
She lays her eggs there. And this mosquito is so adapted to humans, they spend most of their time in the homes and they can transmit the virus and so forth. But anyway, with the throwaway society, there's just an inordinate amount of breeding sites available.
Because we throw stuff out and then water collects in it.
Exactly.
And then you get more mosquitoes. Well, I was wondering when you said that in Southeast Asia, as there became larger human populations, but where humans go, goes garbage.
Sure.
And any place in the world you're going to find, even in a less consuming society than in America, if you got something that's going to collect water,
cans and tires will do it.
Absolutely. And have you ever tried to pour water out of a tire? Interestingly, going back to the La Crosse Aedes triseriatus story, as I told you, that mosquito likes to lay her eggs in these old tree holes, but she also loves old tires. And so most epidemiologic investigations of La Crosse infections in the upper Midwest, if you go around, you'll find some old tires behind a barn or something, find mosquitoes in them, and usually you find virus in the eggs. And in this regard, La Crosse County instituted a real strong public health effort to remove old tire breeding sites, and they closed up tree holes. And it's probably one of the unheralded public health successes because they really got rid of La Crosse infections almost entirely, even though more people were building and the population was increasing and they were moving more into the hillsides and so forth.
You know, I keep thinking when you talk about these things of the law of unintended consequences. I mean, you don't think when you throw a tire out, not only will it be ugly, but you're about to spread major disease.
Well, at least you're putting a good breeding site out for mosquitoes. Mosquitoes love it. And I don't know if you've ever seen any of the tire dumps. Getting rid of tires turns out to be a very, very difficult issue.
Well, we're still arguing about it.
Yeah,
and haven't found the answer yet.
Well, and then you haven't even mentioned DDT. It's one way that it was done and now has been shown to have its own set of challenges.
Well, that's a whole different issue that we can get into. But some of these tire dumps, if you walk around them, there are just clouds of mosquitoes. It's just amazing. And we now know also that mosquitoes traffic around the world in tires. Mm. See, these mosquitoes lay their eggs, and they set there, and they wait then for that container to be flooded. So Aedes albopictus off in Japan laid her, some Aedes albopictus laid her eggs in old tires. They were shipped presumably to Houston, and the tiger mosquito emerged and is covered half the eastern part of the country now.
I'm accustomed to thinking mosquitoes is a nuisance, as I think most people are. You're telling me they can also be fatal. Aedes aegypti, as an example, not every mosquito is a virus vector or is. And what's the percentage? I mean, if I could identify an Aedes aegypti, what are my chances of
spotting an infected one?
Well, and it's not all of them that are infected either, right?
No, in fact, that's probably the major thrust of my research program now is looking at what we call vector competence. And there are major genetic polymorphisms out there or differences in the ability of mosquitoes to transmit dengue viruses as well as yellow fever virus. But let me step back just a second. You know, the other logical thing you would do is develop a vaccine. But because of this business that I mentioned of immune enhancement, you have to have a vaccine that immunizes for all four serotypes at the same time. So it's been very problematic to get a good vaccine, and a lot of very good people are working on novel ways to do this. But point in fact is there's no good vaccine for this disease, and there's no good vaccine for the other major mosquito-borne disease, malaria. So both of these that are just exploding in importance throughout the world because of lack of control efforts or the emergence of pesticide resistance in the case of anopheles that are the vectors of malaria and the increased resistance to chemotherapeutics and so forth in malaria parasites, it's just a disaster for both of these. But to go back to the issue of vectors, a long time ago when a group of us were at Yale in the Yale Arbovirus Research Unit, we were very intrigued by the fact that Aedes aegypti is all over the world. But yellow fever had always been restricted to Africa, the New World, and then presumably with global warming or something, frequent incursions into Europe and so forth. And so we thought, well, why isn't, you know, the idea is, and it's probably true, is that both Aedes aegypti and yellow fever virus got into the New World by a slave trade. It's sort of poetic justice for being involved in such a beastly affair. But anyway, on these slave ships, the virus could easily be transmitted in continuing cycles. The mosquito would survive, and she would lay her eggs in the bilge and in water barrels, and then when they were flooded on the other side, the mosquitoes could escape. And there's a lot of precedent for this. You know, maybe you've heard the stories of Yellow Jack, which is the flying of the yellow flag. Ships coming in from Africa, if they had yellow fever on board, they had to anchor way offshore, ran up the flag, and had to stay out there until the yellow fever epidemic ran out or everybody died, you know. So it's probably true. But if that's the case, and that's how aegypti and yellow fever got into the New World, why didn't yellow fever get into Asia?
And the answer to that will be with us when we return in just a moment with Dr. Barry Beatty, who is a professor of microbiology and the director of Arthropod-Borne and Infectious Diseases Laboratory at the Colorado State University. Bill Russell and I are with him in Taos, New Mexico. We're all going to be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.